Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
I'm Linda Palacio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Greetings, and welcome to another episode of Animal Instinct. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher, also known as the Food Healer, and today we're going to be talking about critical veterinary care with Blue Pearl vet Dr. Christine Iacovetta. I'm really excited about this topic because I don't think people really understand that there even is critical care for animals, so we're going to talk about what it is, what she does, all that good stuff. So, Christine, hi. Thanks for coming in.
No problem. It's fun to be here.
I'm thrilled that you're here because I think this is a really great topic because really, unless you're working in a vet's office or unless your pet has been in critical care, I don't think people even realize that this is something that exists for animals. I think everyone gets hung up on ICU, you know? So I'm very excited to talk to you. So thanks for coming out.
No problem.
So first question, what is critical care?
It's a good question. It's a hard question to answer because I think critical care can be lots of different things depending on hospital requirements. So criticalists do work in different functions and capacities based on the hospital needs. Mm. So we focus mostly on the most sick patients. And so anything that's really, really sick, whether it's taking care of a patient after a major surgery or a patient that ate something it wasn't supposed to and has like toxicities, we'll take care of those guys. But we also are available to help out with other cases that are in the hospital. So maybe something that's not quite so seriously ill, but just needs to have its fluid balance managed a little bit. We can help consult with the other services that are there. And we interact with a lot of the services because while we'll be there maintaining the patient, if they have heart disease, the cardiologist will be involved as well. Sometimes they do need to go to surgery, so the surgeon will be involved. But we kind of manage their overall care, sort of like a hospitalist might do in human medicine.
So you're kind of like the one in charge of the animal's protocol and all that. So like when it needs to go to the cardiologist, you're the one that's, you're basically in charge of doing all this and coordinating all this for them.
Yeah, for patients that are really sick. Now, if it's a stable pet that just, you know, is coming in for its heart murmur and needs a workup, then they would primarily just come through the cardiologist and not need our services. But for anything, you know, trauma is a big one. A dog that gets hit by a car has multiple different injuries, and we'll tend to keep that case, make sure that everything's being addressed, and maybe they have, at the end of the day, a broken leg that still needs surgery.
Yeah.
But we've gotten them through, you know, the lung problems, the breathing problems that they might have, or the bleeding problems that they might have, to get them to the point where they can go to surgery and, you know, get through that safely without, risking their lives just to fix a fracture.
Yeah. And so is there like a typical critical care client? Like, is there a case that you guys just keep seeing over and over and over?
There's not a typical client. I think the most typical thing that I find, because critical care is sort of linked to emergency medicine. And I think to me, the biggest thing about our clients is it's unexpected. And so these are types of pets and injuries that happen unexpectedly. So people they're not really prepared. You know, if your dog has a mass on its leg, you've seen that mass, you know, it needs to come off. You make a plan to go see the vet and have it removed. And you kind of know that it's there and it's, you know, building up to something that you need to do something about. Whereas for the type of patients we have, it's, you know, all of a sudden I woke up and my cat can't breathe and I have to rush them to the emergency room, and I wasn't really expecting this in my day. And so it's varied in the type of people that we see. I think for people that do end up treating their pets, our critical care clients are definitely devoted people, because they are going through a lot of emotional turmoil because there are lots of up and downs with these pets because they are really sick. And so sometimes we have to call owners and say, hey, I'm really worried. I'm not sure, you know, your pet's going to be alive in a couple hours. Oof. And then sometimes we get them through that. And so you have that roller coaster of not really knowing. And so I think they have to be very dedicated people and emotionally able to handle those ups and downs.
Seriously, that's hard.
Yeah,
so hard. So what's the difference between what you do in ICU?
So ICU is, again, like every hospital will be a little bit different. Mm-hmm. For our hospital, we have an open ICU, which means that there are my patients in there plus everybody else's.
Okay.
So if you have, you know, a post-surgical patient that's not necessarily critical, mm-hmm. They'll be managed in the ICU as well. And so you can have a varied spectrum of patients in there requiring different levels of care. But the ICU is really just a place that the animal kind of gets admitted to. And okay. once is admitted to the ICU, that's kind of where they're going to remain for their stay. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully as they get better, they can get moved out of ICU. Their care gets downgraded to, you know, less intensive care.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, hopefully getting them in that path of going home.
So ICU is not, cases that come into ICU, obviously it's a whole scattered thing, but like mm-hmm. if they come to you, then they're like really bad, basically.
Yeah, and I function sort of as a criticalist and an emergency doctor in my position right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will have pets that come in through the emergency service that although they're sick, they're not necessarily critical.
Mm-hmm.
And they may need to be hospitalized, but they're not necessarily getting, you know, blood pressures every hour or their, you know, heart rates monitored every hour.
Yeah.
And so those are less intensive cases, but they're still ones that, you know, I'll be involved with because I happened to have taken them in. But it really just depends. ICU is kind of where they stay once they've been admitted.
Okay. Okay. And then have you always been working in critical care?
I have since my veterinary career. Before vet school, I did work as a veterinary assistant in general practice.
Mm-hmm.
And actually started in a kennel as a kennel assistant in a specialty practice. So I had exposure to both kind of levels and
cool.
differences between general practice and specialty practice before going to vet school. But since vet school, yeah, this has been, it's all been geared towards getting me to this today.
And so this is what you love, is like mm-hmm. all this chaos and getting everything organized and all that.
Absolutely. I think it takes a different type of person to want to do emergency critical care. You have to be able to and enjoy the unknown. So, you know, for our medicine specialists, they have a schedule, they know what's coming in the next day, and they might get something, you know, a surprise booked in, mm-hmm. you know, in the middle of the day or something like that. But for the most part, they have a schedule and they know what to expect for their day. For us, we never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
We don't know who's going to walk in the door. We don't know, you know, when we have really sick patients, if they are going to decline and give us some sort of scare and do something silly that we have to respond to. And so some days are really, really busy, really, really exciting and, you know, adrenaline filled. And other days are a little bit boring because not so much is going on. So it definitely waxes and wanes more than I think other professions or other specialties within veterinary medicine.
Well, I gotta tell you, man, I'm glad you can do it because there's no way in hell that I ever could. I'm so glad there are people like you on the planet. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would be like Chicken Little. It would mm-hmm. just be really bad if I was in there.
Yeah, but it's super rewarding when you get them through that crisis.
Totally.
You know, it's definitely rewarding when you, you know, fix a fracture, I guess. I wouldn't know because I don't do that. and make that dog able to walk again. But it's to me, it's way more exciting to figure out the physiology of why they, you know, can't maintain their blood pressure or mm-hmm. something like that and, mm-hmm. and manage them through that.
Well, I got to tell you, I mean, you guys have a great reputation at Blue Pearl. And actually, today was the first time ever that when I always pump the show on Facebook and Twitter and things like that. And I actually had a woman write in about an experience that she had with a different vet. Told her a dog had cancer and it was terminal, and she really felt like a second opinion, so she came to you guys, and it was just gallbladder. And so she was just, you know, I love Blue Pearl. Blue Pearl's the best. They're so good. So I wanted to share that with you.
Yep.
But, I mean, you guys are. You're amazing. And I love the level of expertise in medicine that you guys have there.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty advanced. And, you know, I'll say we do get a fair number of people that will come in for second opinions, or their vets will send them over for, mm-hmm. you know, just a kind of a consult to see if there's anything else we can offer them. And, you know, there's things that we can offer them that we know aren't going to necessarily fix their pet, but mm-hmm. buys them some time and gives them some sort of palliative care.
That's cool.
And so that's always, you know, nice as well. If we can make a pet comfortable knowing that, you know, we can't necessarily fix them in the long run, but we can give them some good quality time in the meantime.
So one of the things that I wanted to talk about, because when I worked in a vet's office, And I think it's a very common thing for humans to be to not understand why veterinary medicine is so expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that they all think that, you know, it's like a vaccine will be $10, you know, mm-hmm. an x-ray will be $20 and that kind of stuff. So, I mean, what kind of experts do you guys have at Blue Pearl? Who do you work with in terms of, you know, I know you've got a cardiologist over there, mm-hmm. but like, what else do you guys have over there?
So we are critical care 7 days a week. Myself and Dr. Say cover that. There is surgery and medicine as specialties there as well, mm-hmm. very consistently. And then through various days of the week, we also have cardiology come through, neurology come through, oncology, wow. ophthalmology. So we have a broad range of services. You know, we have a CT, so if we need, you know, any kind of neurologic scan, or I quite like it for trauma PETs, so you can kind of see all the trauma everywhere in a nice one test. And so, you know, there is a lot of training and resources that we've all kind of gone through to get to that specialist level. But the other thing too is that we don't function by ourselves, and so we have a huge team of nursing staff mm-hmm. that are equally as well trained, and you're only ever as good as your nurses. So for, you know, every pet that we take care of, there's two or three nurses that have also helped. And so,
cool.
you know, I think whenever the issue of cost comes up, which is a lot, I always tell people to think about perspective. And, you know, expensive means different things to different people.
True.
For some people, $200 is expensive. For other people, $20,000
totally.
Is expensive. And so it's going to vary depending on, you know, your own personal budget. But I just tell people that, you know, there's a lot of care that goes into their pets. And not even just personal, you know, personnel and our training, but equipment. You know, if we take blood from your pet, it's a blood sample. We need clippers to do that. You yeah. need the person that has the technical training to do that. You need a centrifuge so you can spin it down. You need a lab that's going to run it for you, lab equipment that you maintain in the hospital. So there's a lot of stuff that goes into it in the background, you know, electricity. There's lots of
yeah,
stuff
no
that
kidding,
people
no?
just don't even think about. And also, you know, I also tell them, you know, think about your own medical care. When you go to the doctor, you don't necessarily get a bill because you have health insurance
yeah.
and hopefully you have health insurance and you don't necessarily see what that cost is. But if you got that bill or you looked at the breakdown, I mean, we are in no ways as expensive as human medical
yeah.
care is. And I think that we provide, I mean, I can't say this across the board because there certainly are good doctors out there, human doctors, but I think we spend a lot more time with our clients.
Mm-hmm.
We communicate with our clients a lot better than they do in human medicine, at least from the experiences I've had. And I think you get more for your money.
I do too. And I also, you know, the fact too is that, like, you know, when you're pulling blood, like the syringes and the needles, I mean, those are the ones that humans use as well,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that centrifuge, it's a human centrifuge. It's not like kitty centrifuge, so it's a dollar, you
yeah.
know, where you're using real medical equipment. The x-ray machine can do people, you
mm-hmm.
know, it's like
yeah,
all of that stuff.
And our CT that I mentioned, like that's a human CT. So you could go into the hospital and get CT'd by the same exact machine. And they're going to charge you way more than we're going to charge you to do that, you know? And so it's, again, it's just perspective. And I think you don't realize that because you don't get that bill. But
exactly.
for your pet, you unfortunately have to pay for it unless you have pet insurance as well.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm going through it right now. I've got a cat with respiratory problems and he's got a puffer. And I mean, that those meds are human meds. And each
mm-hmm.
month, you know, it's 300 and something bucks for
yep.
one of these inhalers. And
yeah.
it's what it is. You know, there isn't a kitty inhaler or
yep.
made directly for that. A lot of the drugs cross over. And so obviously, you know, if a human is paying $5 a pill and a cat or a dog is getting the same milligrams and the same dose, it's not going to be 30 cents.
No.
You
no.
know, it's that's what I appreciate you talking about this because I know it's a sensitive subject, but I think it's really important for people to understand too, like what's behind that door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is professional equipment. There is, it's like a normal operating room or normal
yep.
doctor's office.
Yeah, absolutely. And we, you know, hold ourselves to high standards. A specialty practice needs to be go above and beyond, you know, what other clinics are doing. And so,
yeah.
you know, it takes a lot more effort and to stay open for 24 hours a day, have people that are going to work there overnight and take care of the patients while they're in the hospital while they're sick. You know, all that starts to add up. And I think over time, you know, I think we're justified in the prices that we charge. It just is unfortunately a lot of money. And from my side, again, it's generally unexpected money
yeah.
that needs to come up with, you know, fairly quick. And so I always tell people, you know, if you don't have pet insurance or even if you do, try and have some sort of, you know, backup. So like I personally have a credit card that I don't ever use.
That's
and it's
cool.
My cat credit card. And when they're sick, that's
totally
what we use. And then I can pay it off. But I know I have that, you know, in the background.
And I mean, and this is a doctor talking right now. So like, you know, she doesn't have any like free services either. I mean, the stuff costs money because it's like she said, there's a lot of drugs being used. There's machinery being used. There's all kinds of stuff happening. It's not this little bubble of the doctor and her cat, you know, dealing with stuff. So, I mean, if a doctor's telling you this, this is really, really good advice. So think about that for a little bit.
Yeah. And I mean, we always try and offer different options to people that fit within their budget. Mm-hmm. And again, when your pet's really critically ill, sometimes we can't give you those options because
exactly.
They're not really medically viable. But for things that kind of fall in between, you know, in more stable patients, we certainly try and, you know, explain why we're recommending certain tests and, mm-hmm. you know, which are the tests that we can maybe put off or hold off for right now,
yeah.
you know, to stay within a budget and things like that.
It all sounds good. This is so interesting to me, and I love the fact that we're sharing this information because it's, you know, like I said, people just don't know. So mm-hmm. I think this is really cool. So I want to say thank you again for joining us. We are going to take a short break. We should be back in about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. Going to continue the conversation with Dr. Iacovetta all about critical care at Blue Pearl.
Hello out there, it's Steve Jenkins, I'm with Fairway Markets. White Leghorn, Red Wattle, Bourbon Red, Navajo Churro. Well, these aren't names you're likely to hear at a Fairway butcher counter or any other counter today, but before the rise of factory farming, you would have. And at Heritage Foods USA, you still do. Heritage Foods USA exists to promote genetic diversity, small family farms, and a fully traceable food supply. You see, we believe the best way to help a family farmer is to buy from them. And Heritage Foods is honored to represent a network of family farmers and artisanal producers whose work presents an immeasurable gift to our food system and to biodiversity. The meat we celebrate, whether it's heritage turkey, Japanese steaks, Berkshire pork, or Navajo churro lamb chops, is the righteous kind from healthy animals of sound genetics that have been treated humanely and allowed to pursue their natural instincts. It's a simple fact. Animals raised according to this philosophy taste better. And as we like to say, you have to eat them to save them. Visit us at heritagefoodsusa.com for more information.
Join us at Lupa Osteria Romana on Sunday, June 28th at 11:30 a.m. for a four-course family-style meat tasting highlighting 12 different heritage breeds. The event will celebrate Heritage Foods USA's long-standing partnership with Lupa, its first restaurant customer. In keeping with our practice, all of the meat served will be pasture-raised heritage breeds. The farmers will also join us to speak about the livestock they raise. For more details and to purchase tickets, visit luparestaurant.com.
And we are back. I am talking to Dr. Christine Iacovetta of Blue Pearl all about critical care. And so let me see what I want to ask you. All right. This is such a random question. This is a terrible question, but let's try it anyway. I know you don't work in human medicine at all. However, let's say an animal has a disease that comes in that is something that is also found in humans. Do you know if the protocol is the same or very similar?
In terms of treatment for that pet?
Yeah.
Sometimes. The things that we worry more about is just transmission of that disease to people in the work environment. And so we treat those pets differently in terms of isolation protocols. So they're not in the general population of hospitalized patients.
Makes
so
sense.
That we don't transfer it to other pets and to people as well. I think, you know, it's kind of hard to answer that because I guess it's going to depend on... the specific disease. Yeah. But in general, I think the general answer to that would be yes, like, because we do, you know, treat them similarly. There are going to be some differences because the physiology is a little bit different. And so, you know, one thing that comes directly to mind is, you know, some of our oncology patients, certain drugs that are, I mean, they are still toxic because they're, you know, chemotherapy, but are safer to use in people or even dogs have different side effects in cats. And so they can't be used at all. And so we substitute them with a different option.
Wow.
And same with dogs. There's some side effects associated with medications that, you know, for other species are okay, but for them aren't. And so sometimes there's differences because of that natural difference between, you know, metabolism and drug excretion. But in general, you know, we're probably using similar medications, probably not as new medications,
that's a good point.
You know, because we, you know, a pharmaceutical company really isn't going to be motivated to release a medication just for veterinary purposes because they think they just don't make as much money versus the human market. And so we do have some of our own veterinary, you know, medications that aren't available for people, but those are much, much, you know, harder to come by, I think, again, just because the financial benefit of that market isn't as great. I already forgot where I was going with that.
Oh, that's okay.
But I think that, yeah, I mean, for the most part, the general principles of treating that disease are going to be similar.
Yeah. Because animals are getting older these days, are you getting more critical care cases than you were in the past?
I'm fairly new to this, and so I don't know that I've been around long enough to really compare through the years. I can see that a large portion of my patient population are also young, because younger, especially dogs, do silly things, like run in front of cars and eat things that they're not supposed to, and that is a large portion of what I see. And so I haven't really recognized that there's a specific like age category that's common. Certainly, as you get older now, because pets are living longer, they are more likely to develop chronic diseases. And so when we have a critical care patient that's in the hospital, you know, say for pancreatitis, you know, we have to worry about heart disease and other things. You know, maybe they're also diabetic, and so it certainly complicates their care.
And then it's another question I hate to ask you because it's like, sorry, Blue Pearl. But what do you get with your clients that are critical care? I mean, are a majority of them terminal, or are there a lot that are terminal? Or are you?
No, I mean, you kind of have to put rose-colored glasses on when you do critical care because you kind of have to be the most hopeful person in the hospital.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people will look at these pets and be like, oh, you know, that they're, it's just, it, there's no point, you know, whereas you have to walk in and be like, yeah, we can fix this. And you have to, you know, really believe that. Otherwise, you're not going to fix it. But if you're dedicated to that and you say, yep, you know, if I look at these problems all individually, I can fix all of these, or at least I can try and help to fix all of these. Ultimately, the body's going to have to do it. But I can try and point it in the right direction. And so, you know, my goal always treating these pets is that I'm going to get them home. They might not be going home for years and years. But I mean, in some cases that is the hope. So again, like a trauma patient, a 2-year-old dog that like ran out in front of a car, my goal would be to fix it and it goes on and it lives a normal, you know, a normal life, lifespan. For some of our other pets, you know, we try and get them through, you know, again, their pancreatitis, their heart failure or something. For the heart failure ones, we know that their heart is bad and at some point it's going to probably be their end, you know, their life-ending events. But, you know, that could be months down the line, a couple years down the line, and that's the goal. And so, you know, for pets that I think are terminal, we usually have a conversation with people about, is there really a point in, you know, putting the pet through this? Because if I don't really see anything that there is to fix, then, you know, there's no need to continue the suffering of that pet and make them go through something that's not really at the end of the day going to benefit them.
And I think that's just, you know, I think that's very just. I mean, if an animal's really in blinding pain, I mean, you know, it's It's a tough thing. I mean, I am one that believe if something is terminal and dying and there's a lot of pain, I'm very pro-euthanasia, you know, mm-hmm. and I understand it's a very sensitive subject for a lot of different people. So, you know, if you're anti-euthanasia, please don't hate me at the moment. I'm talking about extreme cases here. I'm not talking about a healthy dog that comes in and someone's like, I don't want it anymore, so just kill it, you know. But I really do believe that it can absolutely be a gift. Mm-hmm. In many cases.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It's, you know, I definitely have had multiple people comment to me while I'm euthanizing their pet, like, you must hate this part of your job. And that's true to a large extent. It's not something that I enjoy or look forward to by any means. But you also have that feeling of, like you said, kind of a gift. Like, you feel like you're doing the last good thing that you can do for that mm-hmm. pet by ending its suffering instead of letting it, you know, again, comparing to people, you don't have that option. And so if you're dying, you're dying, and they can try and make you more comfortable, but you ultimately have to do that on your own. And that could take hours, it could take days, and your whole family has to sit around and watch that. Whereas for a pet, we can ease that and make it much, much more peaceful for them.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, and for people that aren't familiar too, in many cases, what is done is usually it's a high dose of Valium or a tranquilizer first, so that the animal is completely calm, is usually asleep, and then everything else happens. It's actually quite, I've sat in on a lot of euthanasias when I worked at the vet's office, and it's horribly, horribly sad, but it's also actually kind of beautiful in its own way, because you're just seeing this poor animal who's sitting there, who's panting, who's just in so much pain, or is really just semi-conscious, and just letting them go in a very peaceful way mm-hmm. instead of something hideous that could actually happen, you know?
Yeah, and I'll say we as vets, or the vets that I've worked with, this always comes up, but we don't often get thanked for what we do. And occasionally we do get, like, thank you cards or just a phone call or something. And for me, the ones, and I think this is for other people as well, the most common reason I will get a thank you is for a euthanasia.
Wow.
You know, if I have worked really hard and gotten that pet alive and sent it home, yes, I'm sure those people are grateful and they say thank you. But it's a different kind of, like, someone will take the time to write a card and mail it in and thank you for their experience while they put their pet to sleep, which is always interesting to me. And also kind of reinforces that idea that it's something that you're doing that's beneficial
totally.
To the pet.
Totally. Because it's a pretty amazing experience. I don't know if that's the right word or not. However, I mean, honestly, I'm pro-human euthanasia. People are that sick and dying. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a part of me that's kind of really jealous. I just lost a dear friend who'd been suffering for months yesterday. And, you know, it was one of these things of coming out of veterinary medicine where I was like, why can't we just put him down? Mm-hmm. You know, this poor guy was so miserable and was in and out of consciousness for weeks, you know, and everybody else is suffering and he just wants to go. So I think that as twisted as this conversation can be for some people out there, it actually is something that can really, really be very beneficial for everybody involved. So on that happy note, do you have any favorite client stories or that you'd like to share?
I, you know, there are so many that are in there somewhere, but not, like, vivid enough. I think most recently, like, the cases that tend to make me happy are when everyone is working as a team and that's clients involved. And so, you know, we recently had a little dog that came in that got hit by a car and had some pretty major, brain trauma. And, you know, the people came in, obviously it was unexpected. They did have some, you know, financial limitations, but they scraped together everything that they could, let me do what I told them was, you know, bare minimum necessity for that pet. And that pet got to go home and hopefully we'll make a full recovery over the next, you know, coming weeks to months. And so things like that are always really exciting for me because you get to do what you want to do get to make them better. And you know, you get to see that kind of reunion and how grateful they are when they do get to get home.
That's cool. That's so nice. It's gotta be so rewarding.
Yeah. And I'll say my most favorite cases are always the older animals, because I think it's very easy for people to commit to their 1 year old dog.
Totally.
Because they see the future that they have with that dog. Whereas you have, you know, the 18-year-old cat or 16-year-old cat, and you know, has a somewhat fixable problem mm-hmm. or a problem that you could improve their quality of life on. And you have people that are still willing to give them a chance and invest into them and treat them. And I love that. Like, the old decrepit cat is my favorite because I think it's just amazing, because a lot of people would not. They'd be like, he's old.
Totally. You know,
That's his time. And so it's always fun for me when they treat their older pets as well.
Or the worst is when they've got the old pet and then they bring in the baby. It's like, oh, man. I always feel bad for the old pet. Like, wait a second, what's this? You know? Yeah. Like, hang on a minute here, you know?
I think sometimes it works, other times not so well.
Totally. Yeah. Well, we're out of time, but I want to say thank you so much for coming in and clarifying what critical care is and letting us all know a little bit more about it. Thank you for what you do. I mean, really, thank you for what you do. And Blue Pearl is amazing. Blue Pearl is a really, really great veterinary clinic. They're actually located all over the country. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're almost everywhere at this point. So this is a referral hospital, so don't come in for a checkup with your pets. You can find them online and find out more information about what they do. I am a client of Blue Pearl. I love them. I think they are wonderful. They've been helping me with my sick cat for quite a while. I wish my doctor's office was as clean as Blue Pearl Brooklyn, because that's the only one I've seen so far. But anyway, Dr. Yekaveta, thank you so much for coming in.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
I will be back next week with a brand new show. And until then, take care and have a good one. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.